One guest, 10 songs, 10 reasons. Music was my first love on Radio Glamorgan.
My guest on this edition of Music Was My First Love is best known as a founding member of 80s and 90s pop band The Christians, which included co-writing some of their biggest hit singles, and for his 2008 solo single, Grey's the New Blonde. However, as you're about to find out, there is a lot more to my guest than that, including involvement with other bands, producing, writing a song for a stage show, and the help and support towards his favourite football team. I'm talking about Henry Priestman, who, with much to talk about, we'll hear from after his first choice, which is See My Friends from the Kinks. See my friends. Henry Priestman, welcome to Hospital Radio Glamorgan's Music Was My First Love.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me loud and clear?
I can hear you fine. Within the last few months, you celebrated a big birthday, big family celebrations.
Oh, blimey, yes, 70. I'm now 70. Blimey, my brain still thinks I'm 16 or even 12. But
your body?
It's telling me. I tell you what, this happened, last year, about sort of October, November, I just felt, God, my knees were hurting, my hips were hurting, everything hurting. And I just thought, I've aged 10 years in 3 months or whatever. So I've taken stock of myself and I've actually been diagnosed with a bit of arthritis in the hips. Right. I'm doing lots of stuff. It's funny, now we speak to people, the first thing he says, how are you doing? You know, it's all ailments talk to start off with. So, yeah, I'm doing lots of exercises from the physiotherapist, and I go to Pilates and stuff, and I'm feeling loads better. So I'm feeling
good.
Great.
Yeah, well,
but I'm not feeling 16.
I get together with my two older brothers, and we spend most of the time comparing blood pressure tablets. So,
right. I'm on that. What do you mean, the statins you're on?
Oh, all of them, but statins, yeah. Tell me about your first choice then from the Kinks.
I bought it when I was 65. I'd have been 9 or 10. And I just loved, out of all the kids at school in my class, probably in the whole school, I was one who absolutely needed and devoured music. And everybody was got BBs and Topper and whatever, and I was getting Disc and Music Echo. I just loved it. I heard the Beatles, and it's funny because the first three when you asked me to pick my favourite songs, I thought, well, I just pick songs I love at the moment, and it could change next week. But in the top three of the sort of 60s-y ones were Beatles, not Stones, although I love the Stones, but I put Beatles, Long, 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 and Surf's Up by the Beach Boys and the Kinks. And the Kinks won out just because I'm born on the same day as Ray Davies, so it seemed a good idea.
So you've obviously always been in music lover.
Sorry, not the same year, obviously. No.
So you've always been a music lover then, from an early age?
Yeah, really have. I think it was... Well, actually, it even predates the Beatles, because things like Dwayne Eddy. My mum had a Dwayne Eddy, my cousin had a Dwayne Eddy, and Twang, and Johnny and the Hurricanes, and which got sort of cheesy organ and twangy guitar and stuff, and... things like that have stuck with me all the way. I said, I love my cheesy organ and twangy guitar to this day. I was hearing bits and pieces even before. I loved theme music, theme songs from the TV shows, and I love music. Was my first love, definitely.
And so people like Dwayne Eddy, were they the early influences?
No, I wouldn't say they're an influence. The Beatles were. Yeah. The Beatles suddenly became Dwayne Eddy, and they looked a bit square, probably. And then the Beatles came, and they looked great, and they sang great, and they were funny, and they were witty, and they, from the north. And I think the first record I bought, or probably was bought for me, or I've saved up, Christmas money, whatever, was From Me to You by the Beatles. Mm. So that was their second single, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then I bought She Loves You, and then my brother bought I Want to Hold Your Hand, and, we'd sort of swap. But, right, who's buying this one? Well, I bought the last one.
Well, it won't surprise you to know that we've done over 100 of these shows, and they are the most chosen artist.
Ooh, the Beatles?
Yeah, by far.
Well, they'd have to be. So I'm feeling a bit bad that I didn't choose
them. No.
But anyway, they were in the top three of my sort of 60s type ones. And, you could also put the Birds in there and things like that. And I loved it. We had a neighbour who had a great record collection. we just go around to his house, and he had all the Beatles EPs, you know, which is quite rare to people. You didn't know, you might know somebody who had a single, but have an EP. I don't think anybody had LPs at that time, but and we'd go around there, and he lived in a cake shop, and so you get free cakes and Vinto, and listen to All I Really Want to Do by the Birds.
Free and cakes and the Beatles.
Yeah, exactly.
And so can you remember, listening to all this music, can you remember how old you were when you started writing?
When I started writing? When I started writing, it was, I would have been 22.
Right.
Probably 22 or 21, maybe. And that was when, there's a chap called, I was at Liverpool Art College. I went there because of the links with Liverpool, you know, the Liverpool music scene. And there was a band called Deaf School. Now, one of Deaf School was called, a chap called Clive Lango, the guitarist, and he'd go on to produce every Madness track in the world, I think.
Yeah.
And he did Dex's Midnight Runners, you know, all the big Two Rye, and he did Bowie and Mick Jagger, that Live Aid single.
Yeah.
And anyway, he was the first person. They were in the third year, we were in the first year. And they were really helpful to us, and they lent us their gear and stuff and advised us. And he was, at one point, he just said, you know, you're doing all these covers. We were quite clever. We picked very obscure covers and stuff, you know, like Acapella by Lee Dorsey via Van Dyke Parks. You know, quite obscure stuff. Van Morrison, but actually we did... And strangely enough, Texas...
Yes, it did.
Did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, produced by Clive Langer, who I just mentioned. I wonder whether he heard us do that. That would be a great... Why didn't we do it? Why didn't we release it as a single? But so, yeah, we were in the college band called Albert Dock and the Cod Warriors, and it was very much a sort of a sprawling 7 or 8-piece band with just mayhem on stage. Very entertaining. And but we were just doing cover versions. And then Clive Langer said to us, why don't you write your own songs? And it's like, well, how do you do that? And basically, you bash a few chords that you like, that you maybe heard on, I don't know, I think some... Actually, the first chords, there's a song called Suffice to Say, and I can tell you the first chords are off a Mothers of Invention album. There you go. I'm going to get sued now. No, it's just, again, it's like, take the chords... It doesn't sound anything. Nobody has ever spotted, you know, that I've ripped off the chords on this. Well, you can't really copyright chords, otherwise every 12-bar blues would be being
That's
sued
right.
for, you know.
As well as chatting about your life and your career, Henry, I'm excited to learn more about some of the artists and songs that I know nothing about. However, like the Kinks, right. I have heard of Belle and Sebastian, so tell me about your second choice, Nobody's Empire.
Nobody's Empire... Well, again, that's quite... you'd think I'd be picking the sort of early days Belle and Sebastian. I love Belle and Sebastian. I love his lyrics, Stuart Murdoch's lyrics. I love the sort of slightly ramshackle way they record. They're just... I love them. And this is a slightly later one, so it's better produced, this track, and I think probably recorded in America. And they're still going strong, and I've seen them live, and they're fantastic. They get all the audience on stage at the Philharmonic Hall in Liverpool, and half the audience ended up on stage. You know, the bouncers weren't happy, but apparently they do that on most gigs. And I just thought, God, this is so joyful and fantastic. This is Nobody's Empire. I think it's about, well, I think it's also, it's about, the album's a little bit's about Scottish nationalism, and there's a little bit about Stuart Murdoch having had some really bad something that affected him, some disease or whatever, when he was young. And I think that's what this song... I gather, I'm just making some summarisation there, but and it just gets me, it absolutely gets me, this song. Brings me to tears.
Lying on my bed, I was reading French with the light too bright for my senses.
You know, since your introduction to that, I listened to the lyrics in a completely different way.
Right, and I think I got it right, didn't I? I imagine him... And the first verse, he's in bed, you know.
Yeah.
He's obviously, I think he was incapacitated for at least a year. I think he was in hospital when he was young, and I think it's affected. And I think he's still not, his health isn't great, but well, what a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Beautiful lyrics. Fantastic.
You touched on this earlier. You studied at Liverpool College of Art, and as an aspiring songwriter and performer, it must have been an inspiring city to live in.
Absolutely, and an inspiring time, because it was... I arrived in 1975, so that's just sort of pre-punk, and it's when things like, well, I suppose Dr. Feelgood were going, and even probably the Sex Pistols were just still starting. Anyway, so we ended up supporting the Sex Pistols in 1976, this band I was in from the Arts.
The Yachts.
And it was just so, yeah, no, this was pre-Yachts. It's the band that became Yachts. This is Albert Dock and the Cod Warriors, who I spoke about. Yeah. We just got known as Albert Dock. And so we started probably in about, in 76, we sort of formed. It was just a bunch of mates. Well, what can you play? Well, you can play drums. Well, I can. And I said, well, I can play guitar. I said, well, we've got two guitars. So you play keyboard, because I could play keyboards anyway. And we're so lucky that we got a Farfisa. Well, this was slightly later. I got Farfisa, which became, of course, a bit of the yacht sound, the sound of yachts, which was very much organ driven. But yes, it was a great time to be around. There was this club called Eric's, and you look at almost every band. Well, I would say every band from that was having hits in the late '70s, early '80s, and even to mid '80s. Yeah, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Bonnie Men, Teardrops, OMD, Pete Wiley, Majiwa, loads of The Alarm. The Alarm were there. They Mike Peters, God rest his soul, God bless him. They used to come to the matinees because they were too young. They said, Eric's used to do matinees in the afternoon. And so it was such a melting pot of, you know, amazing, strange, weird people who were all into this. It wasn't necessarily, I was going to say, into this punk scene, but it was more than punk. It wasn't, because it wasn't really a proper full-on punk band from Liverpool. There was the Spitfire Boys that contained Paul Rutherford from Frankie Goes to Hollywood. And Budgie, who went on with Susie Banshees and stuff. But they didn't last that long. I mean, I think it was people in Liverpool, it was more interested in, I don't know, not making just a you know what I mean? And the whole punk thing was over by the end of 77. It was boring, and it was turned into sort of Oi and Jimmy Percy, you know. Oh, yeah, Barry, come on. It had nothing to do with the original spirit. It had that sense. No, that's wrong. It did have something to do with the original spirit, but it was, by that time, everybody else, you know, making interesting music. We'd all moved on. People had all moved on.
But also, when you were there around that 75 mark, in terms of the music that people wanted to hear, really, really, it wasn't that long after the Beatles split.
No, which is so weird, isn't it, now? You know, I think that the last solo album I did was in 2014.
Yeah.
And the Beatles, in that time, the Beatles have done however many albums, split up, done loads of solo albums, and it's just amazing, the creativity there. But yes, but it felt like, this is one thing that was very much there, it felt like we're starting again. You know, we're not beholden to the Beatles. Yes, yeah. We love the Beatles, but it's like moving on, doing something different, and that definitely did happen with the... due to all those people that I've just mentioned, due to that club, Eric's Club,
and
which was amazing.
You and the band, you supported, am I right, both the Sex Pistols and The Who. Must have been a great experience, but also a mixed education.
So the Sex Pistols were one we're still called Albert Dock. That was in October, I think it was in October or November, October 76. And they were great. I ended up being in a band with Glenn Matlock, supporting this girl, Betty Bright.
Yeah.
Betty Bright and the Illuminations, and I was an Illumination alongside Glenn Matlock from the Sex Pistol, Rusty Egan from Visage, Clive Langer, the aforementioned chap who told me to from Deaf School, Paul Pilnick from Steeler's Wheel. It was what a band, and I was, you know, what was I, sort of 22 or something. I'm thinking, I'm with all these mega musicians, and because I'd had no success up to that point. Clive had said, do you want to come and play keyboards with this? So it's... yeah, that was exciting.
And then moving ahead, 1980-ish, you were co-founder of It's Immaterial, playing on their most famous record, Driving Away From Home. How did you and the band come about?
Well, so John Campbell from It's Immaterial was the original lead singer in Yachts and the singer in Albert Dock. So we were like best mates, shared a flat together. And we signed to Stiff, with Yachts, and did a single on Stiff Records, and we were getting great feedback. Peel was playing us, we were gigging all the time, and John just got fed up with all the gigging and left the band. And he was so charismatic, and he was just like, how can we carry on? But we did, we sort of did what Genesis did and just like, right, well, you can be the singer. So basically, me and the guitarist shared the singing after John left. So it was a slightly different band, but I was still sharing a flat with John, and we used to find these old dodgy 60s, do you know the album Nuggets, which is full of lots of 60s garage bands from like 66 to 68, compiled by Lenny Kaye from the Patti Smith band. And he found all these tracks, it's double album, and it's they're all bands from, you know, all over the States, obviously, who'd been influenced by the British Invasion. I mean, there's so many sound like the Stones and the Animals and the Who and the Beatles, you know, it's all out there. And they probably had one decent song in them. And there's some wonderful stuff on there. I'm sure you can listen to Nuggets on Spotify.
Yeah.
I mean, so we were influenced by that sort of stuff. And we'd go to this record shop in Manchester, pick up these dodgy albums, dodgy looking albums, and going, oh, look at that band. They're going to be amazing. Look at, you know, like these weirdos. This is going to be fantastic. And in fact, one of the Yacht singles, which is called Look Back in Love, Not in Anger, that was on an album by a band called Teddy and the Pandas, which was one that we found in this shop in Manchester. And we just come back, just look at the titles and go, that looks interesting. And again, as I alluded to earlier, we'd sort of slightly pass them off as our own, you know, because people had never heard these before. And then we started writing our own song. So John and I carried on doing this. Even when I was in Yachts and he'd left, we just for fun did a tape of Hey There Georgie Girl and I Get a Kick Out of You, and sent it to Stiff Records merely to get a Stiff rejection letter, because they were quite famous, because basically they just say, can I swear or shall I not? No, I won't swear. But basically would say something off,
yeah,
and don't darken this door again, and maybe you should think of another, you know, another profession. So we're sort of well known in the business, and we did it just to get one of these letters. And it, dear Hope, dear No Hoper, I think it starts, you know. And we did indeed get one of these letters. I mean, I think they probably knew it was us sending it in, but that started us. And then we just enjoyed just finding these old records, these that nobody knew, and we'd just do demos of them. And then it became a bit more serious, so much so that I was in Yachts touring the States, and I came back, and it's a material was then John Campbell and Jarvis Whitehead, who was still the core of the band. And we went into the studio, and they got this song. It's like we hadn't written our own songs, and they had this song called A Gigantic Raft in the Philippines, which started getting played on Radio 1. I remember like Gary Davis loved it, and a few of the people thinking, and I started thinking, actually, you know what? This is more interesting than what we're doing in Yachts. Mm-hmm. And we were sort of slightly banging our heads against the wall. It was, you know, getting harder and harder. We'd been dropped by the record company. And so I joined It's a Material. Yeah, so I was a full member of that. Although, ironically, you said I got to play on the song. I assume you're talking about Driving
Away From Home, yeah.
Well, actually, I mimed it on Top of the Pops, and I was still in the band as a session man. But actually, by then, I had left. They recorded that particular track. They recorded in Milwaukee with Jerry Harrison from Talking Heads. But then they came back and did the rest of the album in London, and I was playing keyboards and marimba and sax and oboe and whatever. I'm a basically jack of all trades, master of none, but I can get a noise out of most instruments. So yeah, I'm all over that that album. Actually, just interestingly enough, a new, somebody's just given me for my birthday, it was a new It's a Material album of all the Peel sessions.
Oh,
I did four of them, and it's quite interesting. You can hear the development of the band getting better and better and better. I always say I had to leave for them to start having hits. I was a bad influence. But yes, it was very exciting, Dave, with the success of that. And yeah, I say I was on that first album, which is I still love. It's fabulous. And they're still going to this day. We reformed. We reformed the year before last. It was this band I talked about earlier, Deaf School. It was their 50th anniversary. And as we're all at the art college, they said, would you reform? You know, would it's a material reform? Mm. So I hadn't been on the stage with those lads since 1981 or something like that. It was fabulous.
Let's get back to the music. As well as a few names new to me, there's some legends, and if I may say, geniuses amongst your ten, and one such as Bob Dylan. A big influence on you?
Yeah. I mean, I am not worthy, but I definitely, I mean, anybody can write. I mean, this particular song I've chosen, Murder Most Foul, we will not be able to. Is that what we're doing next?
Is that what
we're doing? Yeah, it is 18 minutes long, so we did have an agreement before we started this programme that you'll only play between 3 and 5 minutes. Yeah. But I urge people to go on out and listen to it. No, you know, he can get away with things like this. Other people can't. You know, it's a song. Nothing much happens in it. There's no chorus. But the same is true of Desolation Row. You know, it just goes on and on and on for 8 minutes. And it's 8 minutes of beautiful poetry. And the music doesn't get boring. You know, if I write a song and do 3 verses in it, I'm thinking, oh, that's a bit much, that. You know, put just 2 and come in with the third, you know, with the last chorus. But yes, this is my favourite Bob Dylan track at the moment.
See if you can shoot the invisible man. Goodbye, Charlie. Goodbye, Uncle Sam. Frankly, Miss Scarlet, I don't give a damn.
I'm not sure that there's a wordsmith out there in his league, you know.
Oh, there can't be. There can't be. I mean, that's such a... We've probably lost half of your audience, but I urge people also go listen to it, but also listen to the go on YouTube. There's a fabulous video, and it has all the lyrics. As he references, so have you checked out the whole thing?
When I put the show together,
He references so many, especially entertainers, blues men, singers. I mean, he references the Beatles there, you heard, the Who, Straight Across the Mersey. But it's almost like, you know, I remember when President Kennedy died. So it's so got so much. It's another song that brings me to tears, that one. And I urge you, chat. Find the YouTube video, because it explains, it has lots of pictures of all the people involved. So some of them I didn't know who they were, quite obscure, you know, but it's a fabulous record.
And in terms of telling a story, I urge people, if they haven't heard it, is to look up a Bob Dylan track called Hurricane.
Oh, right. Well, there again, fabulous, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've got so many Dylan albums, you know.
That was 5 minutes of Bob Dylan's Murder Most Foul, Henry Peaceman's third choice on this edition.
So there's still 12 minutes to go.
Henry Peaceman's third choice on this edition of Music Was My First Love. In the mid-80s, Henry, you got together with the Christian Brothers, Gary Russell and the late Roger, to form the Christians. How did you and the brothers come together? Did you know them well previously?
No, this was due to It's a Material, basically. I was engineering in a studio, so I would do a lot of engineering for It's a Material. I was just this little 8-track studio, and I didn't really know what I was doing, but I bluffed my way through, and it's served me in good stead all these years. And from what I remember, I think our manager, Pete Falwell, picked up... one of the Christian brothers. There were 5 of them: Gary, Russell, Roger, Mark, and Vic. Christian, I remember them all. 5 of them, and we got. This was for a demo for an It's a Material song, which came out called Ed's Funky Diner. The song came out as a single, but this was the demo. And initially, all 5 brothers sang on it, and. At the end of it, because I wasn't writing for It's a Material, although I'd done most of the writing for Yachts, I wasn't writing for It's a Material. So I plucked up courage to ask them, do you fancy hearing some of my songs? Because I was sort of writing stuff, but just didn't know what I was going to do with these songs. I wasn't really a singer. I'd sung in Yachts, but I don't consider myself a singer, or I didn't then. Two of them said, no, we've got to go off and play tennis, and 3 of them stayed, and that was it. We then met up, you know, weekends in either in the studio that I was working at, or I had a little Porter studio, little home, you know, cassette thing, and we did them in my bedroom, and I didn't know whether anything would come of it at all. You know, it was are these songs any good or not? I couldn't tell. We sent cassettes off to all the record companies, and they all turned us down, apart from Island Records. And on that, I think London Records said, we don't hear any singles on this. And it had Forgotten Town, Hooverville, Ideal World, all which became top 30 singles. One in a Million and one other. I forget what the other. Five songs on. I've still got the cassettes. And, Island took the punt, and the rest is history, as they say.
And you, two of the songs you mentioned, you co-wrote Ideal World and Hooverville. One of the things that always stood out about the Christians was Gary's vocals. Must be quite something, amazing, sitting in a studio and hearing that voice sing your songs.
It was fabulous. I mean, the good thing with Gary's got an amazing bass range, and I go, he'd always do One of the Trouble Forgotten Town. He could do that sort of stuff, but he also did, you know, like some of his ad libbing at the end. But yes, I think things on Born Again, I used to wig in the afternoon, you know, it's like low, and then with no protection from this infection, he can do all that. And then you got the harmonies that you know, that Russell brought to the band. That Russell's got the great high harmony. So, for instance, there was a song called What's in a Word, and off the third album, which didn't do so well over here, did well in Europe, but didn't do so well. But that was a single. And yet Russell's voice just pierces. It's just fabulous. And there is that thing of saying, of when a band is full of, you know, they've got brothers in a band. It just works, doesn't it? Mm. The Louvin brothers, the Everly brothers,
the Gibb brothers
work and just... Sorry?
The Gibb brothers,
yes, obviously. Yeah, yeah. So when Roger left, and he was only on the first single, or first two singles, yes, Hooverville and Forgotten Town, I then started singing. So my voice is all right there if it's hidden, if it's at the bottom end, you know. So we'd normally have Russell doing top, Gary in the middle and doing the lead, obviously. I'd be the lower one, and then Gary could add a bass one underneath that, and it would just be a magical sound.
Was it a great experience being in a successful pop band in the 80s, or was there little time to enjoy being pulled pillar to post?
Well, I love the whole process of it, so it wasn't... I did enjoy it. It wasn't... controversially, it wasn't particularly easy being in a band with brothers.
Sure.
I'd say it's probably well known that they sometimes would be... At one point, I was holding the two of them apart and in a TV studio because they're about to fight each other. It was when Roger was in the band and trying to fight each other, and somebody thought they were beating me up, you know. But the thing is, you know, we'd have a thing where there'd be a massive fight. There was a fight once when we were recording filming a video in the States, and Gary and Russell ended up fighting up in the Concorde, you know, when waiting to go onto the plane, and they were dragged off and had to fly home on two separate planes. And it's like, and then I remember having a meeting with the manager, and I said, what are we going to do? And of course, luckily there was about a week so for everybody to calm down, and then the next gig was in Brussels. It's like, right, well, what we'll do is Gary comes on one side of the stage, Russell come on from the other side of the stage, and by the end of the gig it was all like sweetness and light again, you know. That was it. That's the thing with brothers, you know, it would blow hot and cold or something, but it wasn't always good for my mental health.
But
on the other side, it was so successful, and I couldn't have imagined you know, myself having that sort of success. I mean, the first album going triple platinum, it's just crazy, you know, no way. I remember Laurie Latham, the producer, said, it could do well, this album, it could go silver, you know, and it ended up going triple platinum.
Let's move on to your fourth choice. Tell me about Franchette from former frontman of the New York Dolls, who we lost earlier this year, David Johansen.
Oh, yes, I love David Johansen. I don't know if you've seen the great film out called Personality Crisis, for one night only, and it's a Scorsese, I think it's a Scorsese film, filming David Johansen in concert, and also him talking about everything, you know, all his life, things he'd done in his life, and it's absolutely fascinating. I saw David Johansen at Eric's when he did his first solo album. There's a song called French. What have I chosen?
Frenchette.
I've chosen New York Dolls. Yeah, Frenchette. Yes, yeah. I was going to say. Did I choose Frenchette? No,
yeah.
I didn't. Did
yeah.
I? Oh, I must have changed it because I got New York Dolls trash. I must have changed it since I wrote this list, because I wrote a list of about 15 songs to put down. Oh, I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I did that.
Oh,
well,
good.
Trash is a great song by the New York Dolls, but Frenchette is... no, I tried to pick songs that maybe people wouldn't know so well, you know what I mean? And probably not many people have chosen Frenchette before, have they?
No, no. None of the songs that you've chosen have been chosen before, actually. Which is great.
That is fun. That's great. That's fun. How many? And how many shows have you done? You've done
about 100. This is the 118th.
I like that. That's good. That's good. And I wasn't just being deliberately obstreperous.
Well,
it
sure.
was just basically songs that I love, and you know, some of them, many of them, bring them to tears. I say that Nobody's Empire. I've already been filling up the Bob Dylan one. I was. Yeah. There's more to come.
You call that loving French, but it's just French yet. I've been to France, so let's just dance.
Henry, I'm sure that there aren't many in the music business that haven't been influenced in some form or another by David Bowie. And for your fifth choice, you've chosen a 1966 recording that was originally the B-side of Rubber Band. Tell me about the London Boys.
I never knew it was the B-side of Rubber Band, right? I could have chosen, you know, any of his eras, because he's just so magical. I mean, Low is fabulous, Ziggy's fabulous, Hunky Dory is magical. I mean, they're all, you know, right, even Heathen, you know, some of the later ones weren't, for me, quite as good, but there's always a brilliant track on there. But I've gone back to the sort of Anthony Newley days, when I'm five.
I never thought about it like
digger.
That.
Yeah, well, they were also very influenced by Anthony Newley, but the Lads and Boys, it's just a sadness to this, and it's almost like a film. It plays for like a film in my head when I'm listening to this, as somebody going down to London for the first time and getting in with the wrong sort, and it's just you get slagged off a bit for those early albums, but I absolutely love them. I think they're fabulous.
Someone cares about you.
You're listening to another edition of Radio Glamorgan's Music Was My First Love, with singer-songwriter and producer Henry Priestman choosing 10 of his favourite songs. We'll be back with Henry's sixth choice after this.
I bet there are lots of reasons why you don't give blood. You don't have the time. It might hurt. Other people do, so why should you? If that's the case, when you go home tonight, look into the eyes of your wife, your girlfriend, your husband or your son, and ask yourself, what if it was them who needed blood one day? Visit welshblood.org.uk and see when we're next in your area. If giving is in your blood, please help.
Take your breath away.
So that was Joni Mitchell, Shades of Scarlet Conquering, from her amazing album, The Hissing of Summer Lawns. By far my favourite. I mean, I love loads of Joni's albums, but that for me, it's just a masterpiece. There's no bad tracks on it. It's so inventive. It's quite smooth for me. Mm. If you notice, a lot of the songs I've chosen have got a rough edge, and that the production and the orchestration, it's just beautiful. And the lyrics, of course, you know, if Bob's up there, you know, the best wordsmith, then Joni's quite close behind.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you're listening when I'm listening through it a bit. I was doing the whole David Bowie butter.
I didn't know.
And with Joni, I was doing a woman must have everything. You know, I'm singing along with them. It's just while you're not recording my bits.
Cheers for listening to Radio Glamorgan. I really do hope you're enjoying. Now, did you know we're a registered charity? We rely on kind donations from you to keep going, our supporters and listeners. If you've got a few spare pennies or pounds and would like to put them to good use, head to radioglamorgan.com/donate to make a secure donation. Go on, ABBA. Money, money,
money. Radio Glamorgan.
After the Christians, you did a lot of session work, including, for among others, Betty Bright, who you mentioned earlier, and Make Badger. I'm interested now how it works with session work. Are you simply told this is what they want, or is there leeway for improv and suggestions?
Well, in Liverpool, you see, you've been on Wikipedia, which is rubbish, basically. It hardly says anything. I should have sent you a bio guide.
Yeah.
It's more interesting than that. It's Echo and the Bonnie Men. It's Ian McNabb. It's the Mighty Wah. It's Graham Gulban. It's loads of people I've done work and written with.
Oh, I got Graham Gulban on my list.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Well, but it's because a lot of them are Liverpool bands, and because I'm not from Liverpool, I've not fallen out with anyone. You know, there's little spats. Who is somebody talking to somebody? You know, back in the day, this I'm talking about. I think all of us have grown up now. We're all older now. But I was from Hull, so I wasn't seen as a threat, and I wasn't a lead singer, so I wasn't cocky, and I love my music, and you know, so I played with, did a tour with Echo of the Bonnie Men in Europe. Co-produced some of Ian McCulloch's solo work. I've done Ian McNabb, say, from the Icicle Works. I've played on his album. Ian Brody, OMD, when they changed their name to, they did a, what was it called?
Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
Yeah, no, no, what, no, but they then, when they split up, and then one of the, Paul from the band did the Listening Pool, that's right,
okay.
They did an album. So I've done lots of, but it's, tends to be with Liverpool musicians, because I'm not a great musician, but I know my pop, and I'm good at I could put a good hook in there if they'll allow me a few times to play it until I get it right, you know. So there's no point in getting me to try and play something, I don't know, clever and jazzy or whatever, but if you want a good pop hook, I've soaked up so much music in my life, I think I can come up with, so I know what to play, you know, on a particular track. And if you want, what do? You want Farfisa Org? Do you want Hammond? Do you want Wurlitzer piano? Do you want synth? Do you want Rhodes, Fender Rhodes? You know, I know what sound to use and stuff like that. And I've got all these old instruments, which is fabulous.
You're just moving away from the music for a little bit. You're a lifelong fan of Hull City. How far does that go back to childhood?
Yes. Probably when the first match, when I was about 8, I reckon. It's been a rocky ride, but I'm not one of these people who suddenly, you know, move to Liverpool and suddenly start supporting Liverpool. I will support Hull City till I die.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen this season? They've started off well, but by the time this podcast goes out, who knows what will happen? But it's always fun. I've just spoken to the chap who does the commentary for the Hull City matches. I heard he wasn't very well or whatever, so I just pinged him this week, and you know, we were both remarking about how the pre-season friendlies, you know, we beat Sunderland the other day, and they've gone really well, and he said it's the hope that kills you. And it's exactly that. But I support Hull City, and I've done 2 songs for them.
Well, that was my next question. How did you meet up with Mark Herman?
I've known him since he was 7.
So
we were at school together. Of course, Mark would then go on to do Boys from The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, and he wrote and directed Brastoff, and he did Little Voice. He's a very talented chap, and he also happens to have co-wrote some of the lyrics for Ideal World, Hooverville, and Sad Songs off the first Christians album. He co-wrote 3 songs off that first Christians album. He's still my best mate. I'm seeing him next week, meeting up for a belated 70th birthday bash in Liverpool, and it's fabulous working with him. We've known each other so long, there's no egos there, you know. It's all for the song, you know. If we're trying to come up with a song, I often, back in the Christians days, things like Hooverville, you know, I'd have the music and I'd have the melody line, I'm just looking at a piece of paper now, so I would sing anything. So the finishing touches in an album that way, to say, you know, so he knew I'd just sing anything from a newspaper, whatever, just to tell him where the rhyming went. And then he'd come up, you know, the dad of work sends the out of work man to a city of hope and a home. And it worked well like that. I had actually sat in a room and written a song with anybody until about 1996. And I had either written on my own or had written with Mark. With the Christians, I tended to write on my own, apart from that first album, where, say, three of the tracks were written with Mark. And then in 1996, I went on one of these writing weeks where you go and you're not quite sure who you're going to write with. And that's where I wrote with Graham Gouldman and Desmond Child, who wrote all those big power ballads like Just Like Jesse Jane and Living on a Prayer and things like that. And you, Kirsty MacColl and Chris Difford, Suggs, all sorts of people. I mean, it's just amazing the amount of people you get to write with and who you'd never met before. We were all on EMI Music, you know, we were published by EMI, and you were in this hotel in the middle of nowhere in Devon, no locks on the doors, no phones, an honesty bar. I think that was stretched to the limit, that, when Suggs was around, but it was such a laugh. We had such fun. And you just loved everybody at the end of the week. So you went for a week and you'd write in threes and you had to perform the track at the end of the day. I wrote with Lamont Dozier, you know, wow. The man who wrote Reach Out, I'll Be There, Baby Love, and all those Supremes hits and Four Tops hits. I wrote a song with him. I mean, how am I? Mind you, that we didn't really come up. We came up with a title. It was my title. It was based on an old book I used to have, A Little Johnny Head in Air. And he went, oh, I like that title, man. And the thing is, that was the one year where they didn't really insist, especially because Lamont was there, and they didn't. I think they, you know, he's like pop royalty,
yeah.
And I didn't think they wanted to insist that he had to play, he had to sing at the end of the night. But for the other years, I went 6 years running. It was just, it really focuses. God, we focuses your mind. We've got to perform this song tonight. And it was fabulous, some of the ones. And I've got footage of a lot of it, and I've had it all digitised. Graham Gouldman's, he's got an archivist who's archiving all his stuff that he's done. And he came to me and he said, have you got footage? I said, yeah, but it's all on, you know, dodgy VHS tapes. And he's cleaned it all up. I think there are three songs that I've done with Graham over the 3 years that we were there, and they're just hilarious. We were working out three-part harmonies, and you know, and it's in tiny little rooms. You'd go to everybody's bedroom, so we all had a bedroom each, you know, and so there'd be 15 people all scrunched into this bedroom, and meanwhile you're in the corner of the room trying to do this song, and a couple of them ended up on, you know, well, one of them ended up on one of Graham's solo albums. It was like 10 years later, fabulous.
And just go back to Mark for a second. You made some music together to raise a bit of money for Hull.
We did. Twice we've done it. We did one in 1984 called The Tigers Are Back, which is based on an old Yachts tune. And then we did one when they got to the Premiership for the first time in their history. It was in 2008. And we did The City's on Fire. Yes, which was based on one of my songs off my first solo album, Don't You Love Me No More, Don't You Love Me No More, and it became, oh, the city's on fire, we're the burning desire, and stuff like that. Yeah, it was good fun.
Who are Van de Graaff Generator?
You've never heard of Van de Graaff Generator? Well, how old are you then? Are you young?
Nearly 59.
You should. What were you doing in... what were you doing in... Well, I suppose you're 10 years younger than me. 11 years younger.
Well, in the 70s, I was listening to pop music, and in the 80s, I discovered soul music.
Right, okay, yes. Well, probably you wouldn't. So you didn't touch prog. You probably didn't touch it with a bar.
No, my older brothers would probably know them.
Oh, they'd know. They'd know. Van de Graaff. Have you heard of Peter Hamill?
No.
Oh, right. Well, if you possibly won't get them. Did you enjoy the track? Well,
yeah, I didn't not.
Damned by faint praise, but I don't know, I'll take that. Peter Hamill is wonderful. Van de Graaff Generator are from, I think they're from Manchester, former Manchester University, in probably about 1969, and it's prog, but it's not prog about fairies and, you know, topographic oceans, though I loved that as well. I loved all the Yes and the early Genesis stuff, but this is a bit more credible, darker, bleaker. They didn't have a guitarist, occasionally Robert Fripp. You've heard of Robert Fripp?
Yes, I know Robert Fripp.
Yeah. Well, so Robert Fripp was, he would play guitar. If they needed a guitarist, he'd come and play on it. But, peel back your lug holes and have a listen to House With No Door.
There's a house with no door. There's no living there.
really like his voice.
Oh, his amazing voice. And they are still... Well, I've recently downloaded a concert they did, a video of a concert they did in 2023, I think. You know, they're all in their 80s, and it shouldn't work. Because, you know, there's the odd bit of fluff. The voices aren't what they use with the, you know, but there's something just so magical. I was almost brought to tears watching it, and I had to download the whole thing. It's fabulous. And they do that track on this, I think it's live at Bath Forum or something like that. It was just from the other year, and I thought fabulous that they're still doing it and still selling out places.
Are they
huge in Italy, apparently? Huge in Italy.
Are they British?
Yeah, very much so.
I will have to look up some more of the music because I did like his voice. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about production. You mentioned a few people as with Session Work, but you've done a lot of producing for other people as well. How does it work in the studio when you're producing for someone else? Is it their call? Are they in charge, or are you in charge? Are you there to advise?
It depends on different artists. Who have you got? I mean, if it's
Mark Owen, for example, who would have been fair? It would have been his first album, I think, you worked on.
No, I think it was the second, because he'd done that. The Green Man or whatever? He'd already done that. It was the second one, and we spent a year in his house. I worked out that if I'd been a cleaner, I probably would have made more money, because we were paid by when we finished a track, and of course we'd get to nearly finishing a track, and you go, "Oh, I've got this new track," and you go, "Okay." Let's... but I learnt a lot. I learnt a lot about production from the co-producer Richard Norris, and it served me in good stead. And I met some amazing players. I mean, Adam Seymour, guitarist. Jez, the guitarist from Doves, we used the guitarist from Jamiroquai, Rob Harris. And so I met some amazing people. And, I didn't see my wife much that year. But it was an experience. Unfortunately, after spending a year on it, he then went to do Celebrity Big Brother, I think. Was it Big Celebrity Big Brother?
No, he was in the jungle, wasn't he?
Oh, was he in the jungle?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Whatever it was. And won it and then came out. And so we assumed, I remember people ringing me up going, "Well, you're sorted, Henry. You're sorted." You know, he's gonna be. And then the next thing, and nothing all went a bit quiet. Then a month later, Graham Gulman rang up and said, "Do you fancy doing some writing with Mark Owen?" And I went, I thought we'd just finished an album. It was about to come out, and that was when it was like it sort of hit me. Oh right! So basically, he was ditching all those songs and doing a new publishing deal. I think it's because he wanted a new deal, and so he ditched all the old songs. A couple of them came out. A couple of them were on his next album, and a couple of them came out in Japan or wherever. But so for him, just trying to think, you know, we'd be see a lot of the ones when I'm producing, I'm writing with the artist. So you're basically trying to gauge what sort of an album do you want to make? You know, with Mark, he wanted to make we got the impression he wanted to make a sort of he was listening to Radiohead and Talk and things. Yeah. So we wanted to make a sort of pop Talk album. I'm surprised Talk were on my list, by the way. I could have easily put a Talk track on because I absolutely adore them. So with Mark Owen, that's what we were trying to do, was make a sort of pop Talk album. So, you know, you get the sort of the vision of what he wants to do, and then you come up with chords. Right, do you like this? Yeah. Are you hearing any? You know, he'd come up with melodies. And with fair play to him. With Mark, he came up with most of the lyrics. I mean, as a producer, writer, I'm there just in case... The somebody wants to, you know, I'm there to add a word and claim a third, as they say. But yeah. I'm there to help, and if they need it, you know. And sometimes you might go, well, you know what, they know exactly what they're doing with the lyric. There might be a odd thing where you go, well, actually, you put she and she in the two lines, you know. It seems like things that come to me so naturally now, having been the songwriter for how long I've been, you know. But I'm just saying, you know, like, I think, have you had Amy Wodge on this show?
I've tried, not heard back from her.
Oh, right, okay. Well, she's a bit huge now, isn't she?
Yeah.
But when she came, I'm looking at, basically, she came out here and moved, lived in the village I'm living in now on Anglesey. And for about 6 months because she loved it so much here. And we did her album called Waj, W-A-J. Oh, No Sudden Moves, sorry. It's No Sudden Moves. Waj was the one before that. And we did that here, and we used Alid from, Kerris's band, Catatonia,
yeah.
On drums. We had some great players. And we did most of it in this house that I'm in now. We did the drums in a studio in Bethesda near us, and the drums, but most of everything else we did here. So with Amy, she was so open to stuff, you know. There was one song she came in, she had it totally finished, so I didn't need to do it. There was no songwriting, it was one she'd written totally on her own. And it was 5 minutes long, and I cut it down to 2:15, and she went along with it, you know. So it's sometimes you get the thing, especially now, I'm 70, you get a thing where a young thing might think, well, what do you know? Fair play. What do I know about? But with someone like Amy, she was open to ideas. And I said, well, look, you've said that thing. You've said that the lyrics aren't, you're repeating the same lyric, the same musically. And it, you know, she went along with that. Yeah. So it's fabulous doing that.
Let's move to 2008. You released your first solo album, The Chronicles of Modern Life. I guess the obvious question, which I'm sure you've been asked a million times before, why did it take you so long to start working on a solo project?
I've never been asked that before because I never considered myself a solo artist. I mean, yes, I had sung in yachts, but only because the singer left, and I only sang. I probably was the B-list singer. Martin did most of the singing. So I was never confident with my voice. I'm confident with my voice as doing a harmony if it's in the Christians down on the low end. So I never considered myself a singer. In fact, the early demos of that first album of mine, The Chronicles of Modern Life, I've got almost a Dylan-y type. You know, I'm the same age that my father was when I first thought he was old. In fact, when I go and listen to it now, I go, oh, blimey, I'm still singing with a bit of a transatlantic accent. And even on the second album, I was trying to get more to singing from a British accent, basically, you know, trying to get rid of the Americanisms. And there's one song I did, what's it called? It's a title track. It was called The Last Mad Surge of Youth. And then the lyric is, now the autumn before the winter, the autumn. And the first when I did it, I went, the autumn before the winter, you know, the autumn. And then I came back to it sort of 6 months later. Why am I singing autumn? It's autumn. Would you? And in the meantime, I'd got this girl, a lovely girl singer called Catriona Gilmore, who's quite big on the folky circuit. And she'd sung harmonies to that with autumn. And so I had to go through and find. Oh no! I think what happened. She'd sung autumn, but I was singing autumn, and I had to go and find T's from other words
to fit it in.
Yeah, so that is how OCD I am. Nobody would have noticed, but I could notice, and I thought, I'm not having that. I didn't think it was from autumn before the winter. I went, oh, there's a T there, right? I'll nick that T, and I did it. Nobody's ever noticed.
Go on.
You know, I'm a sadder when it comes to doing my own stuff, you know. Not that I want perfection, but it would have bugged me. You know, that thing is like, it would have bugged me 10 years later. Why did I let that go out?
Have you talked about sounding a bit like Bob Dylan in some of your singing. Have you seen the documentary on Netflix about the making of USA for Africa's We Are the World?
No, but it's on my list. I must watch it.
There's a brilliant piece at the end when Dylan comes in and he's standing there with the headphones and they're telling him what he wants, but he's just not getting it. He's just standing there mumbling. And Stevie Wonder, who apparently is a great mimic, calls him over to the piano and Stevie Wonder starts singing Bob Dylan's bit as they want Bob Dylan to do it. And even Dylan is laughing, and you don't see Dylan laugh very often.
No. Brilliant. Oh, I must watch brilliant. That. It's on my... So I'm an absolute glutton for rock videos. I mean, there's one of Sheryl Crow I want to watch. And that obviously, the Beatles Get Back was amazing. There's quite a few, aren't there, on things like Prime and Netflix and stuff like that. Oh, I will watch that. I will definitely watch that.
Tell me about your eighth choice from the brilliant Talking Heads.
You know, the punk years, not much of the British stuff still stands up. I mean, the energy's great, you know. But song-wise, do I go back to the Clash? Not much. The Stranglers, yeah, they had some good tunes. But I go to America, and basically it's Talking Heads and Television and the Ramones, but especially Talking Heads. I think I probably would have picked Television because I absolutely love Marquee Moon, the album Marquee Moon. But Talking Heads, I think Found a Job?
Yes.
I've chosen. Yeah, which is, I think is that off the first or the second album, but those two albums were basically done at the same time, most of them, I believe. And Tina Weymouth, I think it's Tina Weymouth's bass that just made me go, what a track. I'm having this track. This track is going to represent my love of New York music, which includes, you see, Lou Reed's on the list. That never made it, did it? New York Dolls, they never made it.
We'll have to have you back on.
Yeah, Patti Smith never made it. So Talking Heads are doing it. And what a clever band they were.
Yeah.
And they were just, you know, so the rhythms, the rhythm section and David Byrne himself. I mean, wonderful, wonderful stuff.
So there I was, Henry, early one Monday morning in 2008, driving to work. And I put the radio on, expected to hear Terry Wogan, when it turned out he was on holiday, which was all right because Johnny Walker was covering. And Johnny started banging on about this new song. He talked about it for ages and ages. And he particularly liked the opening line of the song, "When I First Met You, Petrol Was Cheap." And the song which Johnny played and continued to play every day of the 2 weeks he was covering was Grey's the New Blonde. And 17 years later, the lyric has never dated. Honestly, Henry, it is a beautiful song. It's written about your wife, is that right?
It is indeed, yes. And I couldn't believe it when that happened. It was like, you know, as I say, I didn't see myself as a solo singer. And suddenly I was putting out this album. And... It was Johnny Walker. God bless him. God rest his soul. It was so crucial. I probably wouldn't be doing this podcast without that, because that sort of gave me. I mean, it wasn't a hit or anything, but it got played on the radio, and it meant I could go out and do gigs. Although when it was first mooted that I was going to have to do gigs, I went, me, what? Sing live, me? You know, with the guitar, because basically. Although I'm a keyboard player, I play a bit of guitar as well, but I'm not great, you know. So we got a friend of mine, Pete Riley, came and helped me, and we played guitar. You know, we did the live circuit, but it just came out of nowhere. You know, suddenly I was on breakfast TV, just singing that very song with a ukulele at 8 o'clock in the morning. You know. But yeah, it's been very good to me. That nearly didn't make it onto the album. That song.
Really.
My co-writer Tom, he said he wasn't sure about it. I said, leave it with me, because it didn't have a middle bit. And I said, leave it with me. And this chap Pete Whitfield did a wonderful string arrangement on it, which I think lifted the track so much. Mm. And it's been good to me, that song.
You wrote a nice piece on Facebook about Johnny Walker when he passed. I looked it up yesterday, saying how important his radio show was as a teenager for you getting ready for work, and how over 30 years later he helped get the first album and your solo career off the ground. He's obviously been an important part of your life and career.
Yeah, I didn't even realise. I'd forgotten I did that. Yes, I remember... He used to, going back to Duane Eddy. Duane Eddy was his theme song, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which again is lovely, because my mum had that album too. But I used to remember working. He had credibility, you know. I mean, even in his afternoon show back in the early to mid 70s, when I was doing a dead end job, you know, trying to, just before I went to art college, thinking, God, I'm not suited to work, me. I'm not suited to all this. But it was like, something before, you know, I took a year off and went to France for a bit and learnt French, got some sort of a scholarship to go to France for a bit. And then when I came back, it was like, well, what are you going to do? What are you doing, son? You're not hanging around here until you go to art college in September. So, I worked in this firm, sort of just in the store, painting bits of machinery. And oh, it was so dull and so boring. And then Johnny Walker was on, and way, because the radio was in the stores. So I'll go, oh, well, I'm sure something needs to be done in the stores this week, you know. And I said, I'll do all the painting of the walls in the stores. Johnny Walker's on, great. You know, I remember listening. It was a breath of fresh air. And he had credibility, especially in his Sounds of the 70s shows he did. He was amazing. And, you know, we miss him terribly.
Did you meet him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, he was great. I mean, yeah. He was such a... I mean, at one point, she said, because we got a field in front of us, she said, can I come and bring my VW camper and park in your field? I said, of course you can. But the funny thing was, one of the songs, when I went, it was me and this chap, Pete Riley, great guitarist, and we were playing live on his show. Now, was it when he used to do an evening show, or is it an afternoon? Anyway, it was going out live, and we did... We did a song called What You Doing With Me. That's right. It's off the first album. I won't actually say the word that I forgot, but basically, I will bring you chocolate. And I just couldn't remember that opening line. The opening line, I couldn't remember it. So I was going, and I went around twice, and Pete's looking at me, and I'm going, and I had to stop. You know, this is live. How many million people are listening? And I'm going, I can't remember the words. And the manager was in the booth. I could see him through the window, and he's scrambling, getting his fat fingers, trying to look at the lyric sheet in the CD, you know. And it just suddenly came to me. And it's actually, I will bring you chocolate only when I've oomped up. So how could I forget that? I did actually sing messed up on the... so I didn't sing the rude word. And as we walked out of the studio, you know, Johnny Walker was there, literally on the other side of the room, looking at me, going, "Well, don't look at me. I don't know, mate. It's your song." And as we walked out of the studio, I walked out, and Pete, my guitarist, said, "That was funny. That was funny, Hen." You know, he said, "I didn't do it deliberately." He said, "Oh, I thought you did." He thought I'd done it just for a joke. I said, "No, I died there for a few seconds. My heart stopped. It probably was only about 6 or 7 seconds, but it seemed to be like a whole minute of me going, what?" And I still get that live occasionally. You're there and you go, "I have no idea what the next line of this song is, and I have got 3.5 seconds to remember." I'm getting quite good at suddenly making up lyrics, and the audience love it if you can get it to rhyme. And I go, "You know, I have forgotten the words, but it's really quite absurd." And they go, "Oh, yeah, clever lad."
You said it was fate. Babe, I'm still feeling it.
Henry, what is Folk on the Farm?
Folk on the Farm is a festival up here in Anglesey that I'm a patron of, and I'm honoured to be a patron of it. And it's for a charity, basically, the festival. And the charity is the Folk on the Farm. There's all these adults with learning difficulties work on the farm. So it's a fabulous occasion. And we've had some amazing, amazing artists performing there. But I'm lucky enough, with my fellow patron and my guitarist, Les Glover, we close it, the festival, every year on the Sunday night. So we do the Sunday night. So literally it was 2 weeks ago, and it was just the best ever. Mm. And usually it's just me and Les and whoever we can get. And so we might pick up a cajonist or a bass player or something like that. At this time we had 8 of us on stage. Well, more at the end, because some of the adults with learning difficulties come on, and it's just absolutely, it's joyful. It's so wonderful. They're getting them all, and they're hitting bits and, you know, shakers and tambourines and stuff. And it's a great big jamboree at the end. And this time we had 8 musicians, 2 cajonists, 3 girl singers, Les and me on guitar, a fiddle player. Who have I forgotten? but it was, magical. It's a wonderful festival.
Do you enjoy playing live? Such a good
I do. I love playing live. I'm not enjoying the travelling anymore, which is why I've cut down a lot. I mean, we used to do loads. Les and I have done, we've been together 11 years now. We did, 12 years. I think this is our 12th year. And some weekends we'd go out on a, you know, drive down on Friday, play London on Friday, then do Southampton on the Saturday. And then on the way back, maybe do a house gig and a garden on the Sunday afternoon or whatever. We used to do loads of house gigs. And it's just the travelling. Now that I'm, of a certain age, I'm just enjoying spending time with my wife and spending time doing things that aren't music. Mm. I mean, I'm still doing loads and loads of music, but just feeling, oh God, I don't have to do that, So most of the gigs this year are North Wales. I'm doing one in Flint. I'm doing one in Cymys Bay, just up the road from where I am now on Anglesey. I did do two for my 70th birthday, one in Liverpool and one in Hull, where I'm originally from, or Beverley, where I'm originally from. And that was the idea, but get them to come to me rather than me travelling down. Why don't you play down south? Because I can't bear going around the M25 and the M6 does my head in. So I did a couple of things where hopefully people came to... Well, they did come because they're both of them sold out. I'm doing the final one of those. It's a sort of slightly retrospective looking back. Basically, I start with Yachts and then go through Christians and then some of the solo work. And then the second half is more sort of more like a normal gig. But the first half is like me talking between numbers. So I'm doing one at Cymys Bay. Cymys Church in Cymys Bay, just up the road.
Tell me about your penultimate choice from American indie rock band Bright Eyes.
Oh, right. Yes, I love Conor Oberst. He's another person who's got wonderful lyrics. What have I chosen? Oh, Classic Cars.
Yeah.
Yes. Is this... I don't know whether he had a fling with Emmylou Harris, but there's rumours, and this song, but lyrically, I always think, well, is that an admission of it? But it's... fabulous lyric, and he's great. It's Conor Oberst, but he is basically Bright Eyes with a couple of other players, and they made some wonderful music.
True patron of the arts, said the best country singers die in the back of classic cars.
A folk musician to end with, Henry. Tell me about Sam Lee and Meeting is a Pleasant Place.
I know very little about him, but I listened to another podcast. Do you know the Guy Pratt and Gary... what was it called? From Spandau Ballet.
Oh, Gary Kemp.
Gary Kemp.
Yeah.
Just lost it then. Gary Kemp and Guy Pratt do a wonderful podcast called The Rock on Tours, and they get everybody on. And they had Bernard Butler on a couple of weeks ago. Well, I listened to it a couple of weeks ago. And they were talking about Sam Lee, and because Bernard had produced it. And it's great.
I thought I could tell.
Where do you get to hear new stuff? You know, the radio doesn't play stuff that I want to hear, basically. Occasionally Alexa throws up something, when you say, Alexa, play this, and they play other tracks that you might like. In fact, I discovered something this week that that I thought, wow, I would have never heard that. But, I mean, the radio's, I don't listen to radio anymore. So it was like, yeah, I'll go and check him out. It sounds interesting, this chap. And it is. And I just heard it once. I went, right, I'm having that record. Because I'm still I still buy vinyl. Mm-hmm. And, I just thought it'd be nice to finish with something brand new that I hardly know, but just appealed to me straight away.
Two final questions, which I ask all my guests on Music Was My First Love. Looking back... over a full and busy career, is there one thing professionally that you're most proud of?
Oh, I suppose it's my first solo album, because that's been such fun since 2008. At 2007, I left the Christians for the second time. Well, no, the first time I didn't leave because Gary left, but in 2007. I think we played Dubai and it was all getting a bit weird, and I just thought, this isn't fun. But I didn't know what I was going to do. I thought, well, I might, I've done bits of Wildlife on One, Natural World soundtrack stuff, and I've done bits of production and quite a bit of co-writing, but not like I've had big hits or something like that. So I'm thinking, what am I going to do? I was 53, so, a long way off until they get me pension. What am I going to do? And so I suppose I'm most proud of that album, Chronicles of Modern Life. And it's still, I mean, you played Grey's New Blonde then and thought, well, it still sounds all right. Mm-hmm. Don't sound too bad. So, yes, probably that. I've done so. I've had an amazing life, an amazing career. And it's not really a career because nothing's planned. Who knows what's going to happen next? I mean, working with a girl singer from Leeds called Megan Carroll. with a chap called John Beck. Now, John wrote Put Your Records On.
Oh, and, yeah.
And he wrote Sleeping Satellite.
Oh, Corin Bailey Ray.
Yeah, Corin Bailey Ray, Put Your Records On. Yeah, he wrote that. Grammy nomination for that. And he got three songs on the last Kanye or Ye album. So he's a fabulous writer. Anyway, we've started, since lockdown, well, just before lockdown, we wrote a musical together. And we sort of carried on working. And it's all been done on Zoom. So that's what I've been doing recently. We just actually went in the studio 2 weeks ago. It's the first time I'd met this girl. I'd written four songs with her, but we'd never met her. We'd just done it on Zoom. So I went into the studio and, you must be Megan. So hopefully that's going to come out in the next few months, I think. And I might be doing a Christmas song in Welsh, doing Dysgu Cymraeg, but I'm not great. But I won't be singing it, so I don't have to worry about that. I just come up with the music. So I've always got something on the boil.
So
I suppose it's about time I did a new album, isn't it?
Well, it is a bit. Yeah. Well, you just answered my last question, which is what are the immediate plans? But a new album would be nice.
Yes, well, a last solo album I did was 2014, but I did do an album with Les called Six of One and Half a Dozen of the Other. That was in 2018. But that still is outrageous, isn't it, that I've not done? Yeah, but I'm slow. I'm not one of these people who whacks an album out every year. It's got to be good. Yeah. I don't want to do anything that I look back and go, oof. I mean, one fun, lovely thing that happened this year is that my old band Yachts, we released our third album, as in it was stuff that I found in my loft. Load of cassettes, yes, cassettes, that I found in my loft when I left Liverpool in 2021 to move to Anglesey for good, and there were 19 songs that nobody had heard.
Wow, great.
And I thought, what do we do with these? Are they rubbish? I think we thought they were rubbish because when we split up, nobody would sign us. We'd lost our record deal, nobody would sign us. So I think the heads were down, and we thought, this is maybe it's not good. I sent it to about 5 different people, and they all come back saying this is great. And it came out earlier this year, was it late last year? And it's had, apart from Mojo, who sadly didn't review it, but it's had 4 stars in all the, you know, Uncut, Classic Pop, Record Collector, Shindig, R&R, all these, Guardian, The Observer. And I can't believe it. Suddenly we're cool. We were never cool. And so
cool at 70.
Yeah, cool at 70, finally I'm cool. And he got to number 26 in the Heritage chart, which is this chart that Mike Reed does of all the old fogies. Well, got to number 26, I can't believe it. There's a new single coming out off that, probably in a month or so's time. We've done a video for it. I mean, when you say a single, basically it'll be online and stuff, and it's on the album. But yeah, I'm never idle. There are never enough hours in the day.
Harry Peaceman, it's been a really enjoyable couple of hours or so. Thank you so much.
I've really enjoyed it.
Lovely. Cheers.
Meeting is a pleasant place between my love and I.
You've been listening to Music Was My First Love on Hospital Radio Glamorgan, where Henry Peaceman has been choosing 10 of his favourite songs. I'm Andrew Wolfe, and join me again soon when another guest chooses 10 of their favourite songs on another edition of Music Was My First Love.